Welcome to The Middle, an exploration into the organisational layer that has the biggest impact on overall performance. In this podcast series, Stephen Wilson from Birmingham City University discusses the issues with executives from both the private and public sectors. For alerts of the next programme, don't forget to click the follow button.
So on the programme today, I'm delighted to introduce David Thompson, who's the Chief Constable of West Midlands Police Force. And clearly the organisation is very much in the public eye. Political football in many situations, and often under tight budgetary constraints. So welcome to the programme.
Welcome, yeah, thank you.
I'd like to take you back, if I may, to 2008. Credit crunch was upon us. Lots of fears about what sort of implications there were going to be in terms of meltdown, and clearly in terms of public sector, a great deal of scrutiny on public sector budgets, and an enforced constraint on the police force of 4% per year over the next 5 years. Must have felt very challenging in terms of how can we maintain the same level of public order, respect and service when we're having the feet cut out from underneath us. What was it like at that time, David?
Now, you know, in lots of ways, really interesting those first few years because policing had seen its budgets go up quite a lot and actually being faced with the challenge of a 20% reduction in the core grant was initially quite a seismic shock to us. And actually, you know, there were a number of quite crude things I think policing did very quickly for that the first sort of 6-8 months. But actually, I suppose the one of the upsides then was that I think for an organisation that can be in its public expectations, in its governance, quite conservatively managed, policing can be quite conservative itself. But there were lots of things I think we wanted to try and do that actually sometimes our stakeholders wouldn't perhaps always let us. And so there was a considerable phase of innovation that came through. I think the executive management of policing as a kind of big organisation, the financial awareness increased significantly. And I think a lot of really, really innovative practice. And I think for a long period of time, if I'm really honest, there was a considerable amount of waste to take out of policing. I think that we focused more. I think we improved policing delivery while reducing resources simultaneously. But I think where we've kind of got to now, that's we're now kind of here in West Midlands Police, pretty much 25% of the money's gone. And I think we're in a very different position now.
Based on your description there, would it be fair to say that prior to 2008, when the budgets had been increasing, you had a fairly hierarchical, top-down, command and control type of environment? And, you know, the inference is that post that period, the whole dynamic had to change in terms of how it's controlled, how the power, how the resources are allocated.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's true. I think policing still got quite a lot of command and control to it. I mean, sometimes for operational reasons, that's a very good way of delivering in crisis, but actually it's one of the problems that we can drop to a default way. No, I think that we needed to be more innovative. We needed to recognise that policing organisations needed a lot more business professional skills. So we'd had lots of police officers running functions that in other organisations we would see as being a skilled professional. So the organisation, far more of its leadership is now non-police officers, and that's a very good thing. But I think also the way policing is organised. So we organised ourselves very much in 2008 in kind of one big police force with lots of little police forces that were very autonomous, that had all the policing functions you'd expect locally. And I think we've moved through a phase now where we're much more matrix in the way the organisation works. We find that quite hard because we're command and control. We're still working through that, but actually we are. Much more focused on capabilities than structure now. So, you know, having custody capability rather than actually a kind of, you know, a series of cells at the end of the corridor that whichever sergeant comes in, because there's lots of things need to be dealt with. And that's been necessary because, of course, not only has policing's budget been reducing, but we've been entering a phenomenal information and digital age. And that's changed policing just as much as austerity.
This very interesting matrix challenge that you started to open up, and I'd like to explore further with you, suggests that in the past resources sat in departments and those departments had their own priorities that they were trying to work on. And the Matrix was an attempt, was it, to coordinate and to align the priorities so that the resources could be drawn on by people on the ground, as it were?
Yeah, I mean, I think our approach in the past was to a large degree to create quite many police forces, I'll describe it. So the force used to have 21 operational command units. Coventry was split into three, each with the chief superintendent on districts. By 2010, we'd moved that to a borough-based structure. But it had a chief superintendent at the top, like a mini chief constable, and all the things that that person needed to deliver local policing was under that person's command and control. And actually, I did a job like that years ago, and actually, it's tremendous fun. It's like being the captain of a ship. You've got all the different skills. The problem with that, though, is that the mission of policing has become too complex now. So, you know, instead of it just being about burglary or robbery, you know, it's about child protection, it's about human trafficking, it's about modern slavery. You can't deliver that expertise in that model. And the other thing is, of course, that it's you don't generally drive up the level of skill levels to the highest standards, so you end up with a constant standards activity. So the matrix structure really is trying to simplify the mission. It's something my predecessor started when I was the deputy chief here, which was so our local chief superintendents now that we have work on areas actually directly manage very few staff now. But they own the relationship with our partners at local authority level. They own the effect that we're trying to deliver in place. They have to make sure the organisation galvanises to do that. But they spend less time now worrying about rostering, how many detectives are on what duty and what course they've been on, because functional areas do that. So it is trying to simplify the mission that people have got. The challenge, though, in an organisation that's used to telling people what to do, is that when you're beginning to negotiate, you're getting people's support, that is quite hard. But that's one of the reasons that more police staff in the organisation have been good, because we have a HR business partner model here, where actually everybody shares HR business partners, and they all wanted their own to start with, and they wouldn't go back now. So we are actually seeing, I think, some of our police staff leaders are much more used to this way of working, is starting to actually mature the organisation.
You mentioned this notion of the challenges of slavery, cyber security, cyber crime, knifing very much in the public eye at the moment, and this notion of people on the ground liking and being good at being heroic fixers, grabbing resources, running, fixing jobs. How do you see the tension with getting them to do that, but also to be more issue-faced in terms of the way we're handling things, the processes that we've got, the allocation of resources, and having that kind of duality of focus?
I think it's really hard, and I occasionally reflect back on when I became a chief police officer in 2007, assistant chief constable, how much more simple my job seemed then than it is now, because the world's quite complex. So I think, first of all, what we've got to recognise is that for very good reasons, and there's a problem with this as well, so for very good reasons, policing has become more focused on vulnerability and the vulnerable in society. And, you know, the analogy, the Rotherham issue has had a huge impact on policing. The challenge of that at the same time is that the mission of dealing with more vulnerability is actually quite costly, it's quite expensive. I'm not always sure the police are the right agency for all that work. And at the same time, it's happening to a degree in austerity to the degradation of the traditional things the public want. So the phones are not getting answered as quickly. We don't turn up quite as fast. The burglary or the theft you've got might not get investigated to the same degree because we're now investigating human trafficking. So balancing those things out is really tricky. I think one of the things we've done well to do that is actually anchoring organisations much clearer in a vision and values. Because actually, you know, I describe the values of the organisation as kind of, navigation tools for a complex world. Because actually, we talk about our values, about offering friendship and service. You know, we talk about key things around diversity, things that actually ensure that people know what is important, because actually it's much harder for me to say prescriptively, right, we're concentrating on robbery or we're concentrating on this. Actually, what's more important is the understanding crime, what's vulnerability, actually where do we need to step out of the boundaries, when do we jump into something that might not be in the core role, but it's kind of really important. So it's a pretty complex place, I think.
So drawing on those resources, having people on the ground who've got the sensitivity and the judgment to handle these highly interrelated issues, you know, I believe there's no such thing as a standard murder. You know, every case is unique. They need to be sensitised, they need to have access to information. You mentioned IT systems. Do you find that there's a day-to-day operating and modus operandi way of working that sometimes clashes with when you have a catastrophe going on. You've got the underground bombing in London. It almost strikes me that, like in the defence industry, there's a peacetime mentality and there's a wartime mentality, and it's a completely different way of working. Is it the same in your own environment?
So policing is generally operationally quite a tactical business, isn't it? You know, police officers turn up in moments of great uncertainty, take a very small amount of information that's delivered in chaos, and make decisions to do things, because not doing things isn't an option. And actually that kind of mini crisis model is something, and drives the decision making style also, that's very enjoyable. And actually, one of the challenges I have is actually that for the chief constable, who was a constable, that is not a great way of making decisions. So actually, one of my conversations a lot, you know, I have an expression about panicking slowly at this level, or, you know, that actually I've earned some strategic procrastination, and I can take a little bit longer to think about things, because actually policing quite likes that warfighting crisis. Now, I'm not saying we like terrible things to happen to the public, but policing is often its best when the odds are stacked against us, a tremendous challenge, we all come together, you know, we kind of love diving into that sort of stuff, because we grow up actually as professionals managing crises, small crises. But actually then trying to ensure that an organisation embraces diversity, that an organisation is reflective on vulnerability, that an organisation develops itself in a more mature way, and actually, you know, he's more consensual, he's more participative in decision-making. Actually, surprisingly, that is something we need to do more regularly than the crisis management at this level. But actually, it comes less easy when actually, as police officers, we've all been constables.
It's a fascinating instance. And many other organisations are struggling with the same sorts of issues. One of the issues you raised earlier was this idea of localisation versus centralisation. Mm. The sharing resources, they're making the budget go further, the matrix organisation. And localisation, particularly in today's 2018 environment, seems to have brought to the fore more issues about Muslims, about different ethnicity, about different genderity and sexuality, that are making that local engagement and connection even more challenging than it was with the street bobby in the past.
Yes. No, I think we police very, very complex communities, particularly here in the West Midlands. You know, we've got the youngest population in the West Midlands of any county in the country. It's the most deprived. It's the second most ethnically diverse. People want to interface in different ways. Young people are far more digitally inclined. They're not going to go to public meetings and things. You know, so how we work has changed hugely. And we've had to be, I think, tremendously thoughtful about it. So, you know, our view is that policing will always touch communities, and so how local policing configures is really important. But we've had to do a lot more professional work about how we do engage with the public. So, you know, one of the things that I think is changing about the way we deliver policing here in the West Midlands is that policing used to operate what I call a deficit model. So we would go along to the public and you'd tell us what was wrong with your area. And we used to have this expression, "You said we did." Well, even when we had lots of resources, we weren't great at solving all the problems on our own. We now try and take more of an asset-based approach. So we've trained our police community safety officers to be much better at public engagement, to lead the public engagement work, and doing a training programme to develop them, taking an asset-based approach. Really, some of our engagements, these world cafes running communities, are much more about what does everybody like about this place, what's really good about the community, what do we think of real strengths, you know, what do we think we want to do next, rather than tell us all your problems. And I think we're starting to try and drive up a more positive engagement with the public and a bigger role for the public in their own policing. So things like street watches, where we've got members of the community who will put a tabard on them and go and do a little bit of wander around eyes and ears to report things to the police. We've got a wonderful in Stockland Green, a 999 dog walking club who walk through the park and keep an eye on it for us. Now, none of those things are asking the public to do policing, but what they are doing is trying to involve, at a time we become more digital, at a time we're more sophisticated, trying to get back to those Peelian principles of the public are the police, and asking the public to play a part about, well, what could you do as a partner with us in this area? We know what the police can do. We know there's less police than there were. How can you play a role? And I think that's really important for us now, because actually we will never really fully understand all the people and communities and dynamics we serve. We've got to reach out and work with them all. But I think often they're really well informed to tailor some of the answers with us.
There's a really interesting parallel with the terminology we'd use in a business context of customer intimacy. Yeah. You know, being close and understanding and being of one mind, as it were. Yeah. And I think you're mentioning things that resonate very clearly with that concept. Of course, the other issue that comes together with customer intimacy is this notion of beyond today's customers. And so are you starting to think of, you know, we have our issues today of human slavery, cybercrime, and those others that you mentioned. Are you also starting to think, okay, what are the next things coming that we should be able to cope with?
Yes, I think we are doing some of that. I mean, I would say if you look at the Chief Inspector of Constabulary's recent report, he challenges the service for not being long-term planning. I think that's kind of fair a little bit. I'd also say juggling the financial challenges plus the service delivery challenges, we're spending more time on just managing now than we are about looking ahead. But actually, one of the things we've done here, we formed a partnership back in 2012 with Accenture. We formed that partnership to be transformative, not to run our services. And actually, that part of that partnership was about bringing the knowledge, ingenuity, and supply chains of the private sector to work alongside policing. So what we are doing at the moment, we've got a very intensive change year next year in West Midlands with a lot of big legacy technology changes. But what's happening over the next few years is really a much more forward-reaching programme, because we're starting to, I think, and you know we'll be dealing with more data. We're starting to, already we're using robotics in many of our processes. We're starting to use much more capability around big data to manage these things. We're beginning to offer different services, web chat. We'll probably move that into using chatbots and AI in that more frequently. And we're starting to use artificial intelligence in some of the ways we manage some of the evidence we've got. Because, of course, in a digital world, you've got so much stuff to manage. Now, lots of that actually is probably about technology activities why the police deal with the things the public bring. But some of those issues, I think, might change. Although, you know, I suppose in one way that many of the things that come to the door of policing, you know, in lots of ways are probably not hugely different than they ever were. They're just representing in slightly different ways, and the amount of that now as a digital footprint has changed. Surprisingly, the public still prefer to phone us, which is still interesting in this day and age. But actually, we've recently introduced web chat, and we now do about 700 web chats a day, which, given we've done very little publicity of that already, does show there is an appetite for more digital communication.
Changes in the community. Very interesting. Changes in the issues, the priorities. Can I change the perspective to look at your side in terms of changes of the employees that you're now taking on? Yeah. Because clearly millennials, you know, people born around the turn of the century, seem to be coming in with a very much lower respect for authority, less compliant, more questioning, expectation of 24/7 connectivity. You know, I might be in the middle of the meeting, but I've just taken a text and I'm going to respond to it right now. What sort of challenges is that bringing to an organisation that has been perhaps a little pseudo-militaristic in the past and command and obey and briefings?
I think it's a really good point. I suppose a couple of things, really. The first is that for quite a long period of austerity, actually, we didn't actually recruit huge amounts of people because we had to get a lot smaller. And so we've definitely gone through a kind of 5-6 year period where we didn't see many people come to the force. The average age was going up, and given we police the youngest community in the country, that's a real, real problem. So we are recruiting more, and particularly on the police officer front. The great news is actually policing is still a kind of vocation that people are drawn to, which is fantastic. I think I would say that actually, I think the sort of things we notice is that, you know, people like information more in sound bites and smaller digestible chunks, you know, this kind of move towards long news that's going on in some sectors to cater for perhaps some of us who like the, but they're definitely much more instantaneous communication. Anything that's too long or complex is challenging. I think the challenge to authority, we've kind of embraced that really well in some areas. So we, for example, are a big supporter of Police Now, which is a graduate entry scheme for officers to give them rapid responsibility by moving them into neighbourhood roles within weeks of joining, taking some of the brightest graduates in the country. And they're fabulous because they challenge how we tackle problems, and particularly at neighbourhood level where, you know, problem-solving skills are high, they bring some fresh thinking. I think it's still probably, though, fair to say that we're still an organisation that you know, largely our average police officer recruitment age is about 26 still. We are still, I think, probably quite dominantly an organisation that actually I don't think that generation has quite challenged us enough yet. I think actually there's a slight tendency in police cultures for us to assimilate people because of the institution. So one of the big pieces of work we're doing on engagement strategy here is to generate a much more free-flowing conversation. It is coming. We're starting to see much more interaction on issues in the force. We'll deliver better internal communication tools. So we're, you know, we can be a bit broadcast. We're looking at what we do with our change on our intranet, for example, to create a more Facebook tile internal relationship. You know, I can share problems, I discuss and solve work problems collaboratively. Much more collaboration tools, which I think will help us with that as well.
In other organisations, it's been very tempting where you have different mindset, a different challenge to set up a skunk works. You know, put all those people in a completely isolated environment where no holds are barred, just get the job done. And, you know, it does deliver, and we see a lot of military projects successfully executed on that basis. However, the challenge that concerns me is it doesn't face up to the changing of the host organisation.
Always with policing, there's an effectiveness test, but actually the public legitimacy test is how we do things. So what we do and how we do is vitally important policing. If you look at any of the criminological research, actually, the public's confidence in police is much more about how they do the role than being effective. Now, nobody wants to run a not effective police force, let me say, because I think we want to be effective, but also we want to deliver how. So actually changing the organisation culture to be more customer focused, to be more concentrated on its own legitimacy with the public, because let's be honest, the challenge I think out there is that institutions could become less legitimate to the communities we serve. Certainly as we get smaller, that's a challenge as well. So I think we are doing work here around how we work. We do a program here at the moment around fairness in policing, which actually, to the organisation, they may not know we're doing it because it's somewhat patronising. So I need to do a programme to make us fairer, because that kind of hurts. We all like to think we're fair, don't we? Because we're all wonderfully objective, but we're not. And so more in our training, our skills, our activity, our recruit induction, whatever we do, even the way we write our policies, we're spending a lot of time concentrating on either organisational or procedural justice to make sure actually those things are much more inculcated into our organisation. And the work we're doing on diversity and inclusion, again, is picking up those pillars and much more monitoring the effect and fairness we do. Because I think that being an effective organisation is jolly important, but as policing gets smaller, which invariably has become, if it doesn't operate in a way that delivers value to community, drives up social capital, behaves in a fair way, then it's not going to have much legitimacy with the public. And so we have to change the whole organisation around that. We don't have the option to concentrate on a few specific products.
You mentioned the effectiveness word, and a lot of private enterprises struggle with this in exactly the same way. And the tensions is often with efficiency, you know, and the efficiency is very easy to measure, you know. What was the value of your outputs in a business situation? What was the value of your outputs? What was the cost of your inputs? Okay, you were 40% efficient or 60% efficient, and you can put metrics on it that will drive those efficiencies. The effectiveness is much, much harder to measure, and often measures are undertaken to improve efficiency that undermine effectiveness. Do you suffer the same dilemma?
I think that's exactly where policing is now around some of its challenges. So the demand on the organisation has, you know, just increased massively over the last few years. More calls, more complex calls, more complex, high complexity work dropping towards us. And what that's seen us do is work out ways to cope with that work, manage that work, triage that work more. But actually what we've also seen is the type of outcomes that we think are important in terms of customers' experience or bringing people to justice, those areas declined. So I've used the analogy, we're driving efficiency to the point of ineffectiveness in policing at the moment, because we're coping with the work, but the outcomes are deteriorating. I think the other challenge with policing in this area has been that policing used to be a very target-driven, numbers-driven world. You know, how many burglaries, how many robberies, how many this, how many that. How do you gauge your effectiveness on domestic abuse, though? Because actually, we want people to report. So being effective doesn't mean the numbers will go down. It probably means they'll go up because confidence will grow. Human trafficking, well, counting the numbers, you're going to count more if you spend more time looking for it. So actually, what's become harder to gauge is effectiveness now. The days where it was crime up or down and we won or lost on that, that's become far more complex. And so the test has been much more, do I have the right capabilities against threats? But of course, you know, it's just a lot harder to count effectiveness. It's tremendously easy in some ways to count efficiency. And the big debate, I think, that's going to rage in this next spending review for policing is how do you actually gauge police productivity? Because it's actually quite hard. And I always find in policing occasionally people rather sniffily look down the nose at the police as if somehow we're just kind of, you know, we're all Mr. Plod. But actually, gauging police effectiveness, you know, academics, think tanks and many others wrestle with it, as do we. Mm. It's tricky.
It's a really contemporary issue of our times for private sector, for public sector, many other types of organisations. These allegedly soft targets, but actually the soft targets of effectiveness are really what the whole thing's all about. And you know, look at stock exchanges looking purely at shareholder value and share price and, you know, return on investment, you know, a number of the metrics in profit centres, they're so nice and clean, and yet they're really missing the target altogether.
Yeah, and I generally think we're struggling with this. I mean, I think that actually, if you think back, that there was a period in policing where the answer was the single measure was public confidence. If public confidence was high, that's all that matters. Well, you know, how do you gauge public confidence is tremendously challenging as well. But actually, you know, I think there is a balance here that says actually, if people feel safe, if people actually feel the police are an organisation that treats them fairly, that they're interested in local issues, that they are, you know, they are incredibly important measures of policing because they're measures of decency and democracy, I think, and how an organisation with our powers works. Of course, none of those things are achievable if you're living in an area where crime's going through the roof. And so they are tied to effectiveness, unquestionably. So our answer is we have to find a way of doing both, but it's actually become quite complex, I think.
Mm-hmm. In this era of change that we've been discussing throughout our conversation, have the metrics changed? Have you mentioned moving to a matrix organisation? Have the ways that you've measured the number of measures changed in a way that you're satisfied with?
I would say no at the moment. In that, I think we're at the kind of closing stage of quite an interesting, the end of a beginning of a kind of interesting journey. So we, I think a lot of police technology, you know, the types of things we'd want to measure often frustrate our ability to access it. And sometimes those measures have been about behaviours and activity rather than simply, you know, how many of this or that we've done, the widget counting. And that's been a problem for one or two reasons, really. One, which is in a kind of analog world, that information, you know, it was difficult to count and measure it in lots of ways. But also to cope and make sense of lots of data together. So, you know, if we want to look at how, if you were an officer, your behaviour is, you know, we'd be interested in, I guess, how often you turn your body cam on, because that might be quite interesting. We might be interested in how much force you use. We're quite interested about how you drive your police car, actually. We might be quite interested in what the public think when you go to... They all begin to form a picture of you and the quality of your behaviours and the way you demonstrate the force's values. Now, that would have been close to impossible to imagine. We'd be able to develop that insight on how you went about your work and your productivity, your legitimacy, behaviour, etc. Well, you know, we've made some massive investments in data here, and actually, in the next 12 months, we will be starting to actually bring this together to begin to get the whole picture of our staff, our services, in a way that frankly helps me look much more at the demonstration of the right behaviour rather than simply activity. And I think that will really help with the value add we want to do. I think in lots of ways policing's struggling with that still in most areas. It's a big investment we've made here, but I think that the capability to use data in a really transformational way now, and a careful way, because of course it's only the start of the conversation, it doesn't the whole picture, but actually I think can be really powerful, because fundamentally what we're all trying to do, I think, as leaders at this level is be good organisational developers, move the organisation on, but actually for policing we're fundamentally concerned with the behaviours that we demonstrate to the public, because that buys us our legitimacy and it also makes us effective. So I think there's a new age coming, I think, for police forces.
And in terms of how it's managed, would it be fair to say that in the past there was a rather machine-like mentality in terms of command and control and layers, and today I'm feeling a much more kind of organic, kind of living being, sort of complex, you know, where people are self-organising themselves, just much more a supporting appropriate becoming sort of a mentality?
Yes, I wouldn't suggest we've gone from one extreme to another, but you're right. I think, you know, I look back to 10 years ago and think policing felt a lot simpler. I think what we thought was important was simpler. It was usually capable of being counted. We would usually have a clear set of things we want to do, and we would go off and do them, and they were usually to a fairly narrow range of things that policing concentrate on. I think today, you know, the use of evidence-based practice, what works is much stronger. I think it's a much more practitioner-led agenda than management level. You know, I think the greatest achievements that we've had in the last few years as an executive is the growth of evidence-based practice in the force. Why have we done that? Well, frankly, because we did very little about it. The practitioners have driven it at us. You're partly to my shame, but partly to reality. So we've got people thinking a lot more about, well, what works locally. I think people, because they're coming up with complex issues, being more innovative around it. I think we are trying to create more freedom, and I think sometimes we don't always know what's going to be effective at the top of the organisation. So some of our staff now working in the real digital technology areas, it's a very different leadership requirement for their leaders now, because the practitioner's knowledge of the craft is far more extensive than those who lead them. There's still a role to lead those people, because, you know, there's ethics, there's ways we work. Just because we can doesn't mean we should. But it's a very, very different leadership model, where actually the kind of ability to know what is needed is far more close to the delivery than it is back in the office in the way it was. And I think the office needs to, you know, the head office now is much more of an enabling organisation than a directing organisation.
I'm fascinated that you're using the expression evidence-based policing. I mean, it started off with evidence-based medicine, you know, with the NICE initiative. This whole understanding of sharing best practice, you know, if these are the presenting symptoms, then this is the best practice in terms of what they're suffering from, and therefore this is the best practice in terms of how to treat them. And we've seen evidence-based management, and here we are with evidence-based policing. So it's very, very heartening to see it flourishing and taking here in terms of a questioning about going that extra mile, not only having a case, addressing a case and solving it, putting it away, but then saying, what would we do differently? What did we learn from it? What should we do uniformly? And which bits should we make sure that don't happen again?
Yeah, and I think one thing that's been very good about this journey is that actually practitioners have kept it quite real. You know, that so we can be, at the top of the organisation, might be slightly overambitious sometimes, the things we want to know, whereas, you know, the practitioners want to kind of solve here and there problems. So I kind of use two examples of things that I think we've done in the force that are very, two or three examples of things that are very illustrative. So speeding fines. And let me kind of break the absolute clarity of truth that nobody likes to receive a letter from me saying that we've done them for speeding. And the letters we used to send were very official. They would probably require a fair bit of understanding sometimes to understand what they were. I think a lot of people looked at it and threw it in the bin. Our payment rates were quite low around them in lots of ways, and we spent a lot of time chasing them up and bringing people to court. We did some work with the Behavioural Insights Unit and said, well, how do you think we could kind of improve this? And so we now, you know, get a letter much more about saying, look, you know, it's kind of tough, you got a speeding ticket, but you know what, speeding kills lots of young people on our roads, and you know, this is why we do this, and here's the options of speed awareness course, and our uptake's improved hugely. We did a trial in custody blocks where we wrote some stuff on the wall that kind of said, you know, here's you're sat in the wall, you've probably got a bit of time to think about what you do about your behaviour. Do you kind of, you know, here's how you might want to think about something different. Here's your contact. We tried that. Actually didn't make much difference. So we know it didn't work. And then I suppose recently, you know, the two huge trials here, we've just done a huge randomised control trial on engagement. What works with the public? What do they like? What's most effective to involve the public? And we did one recently on a very large one here on conditional cautioning, again, to see what works with young people's offending. So these things are driving, I think, us to make much more evidence-based decisions about work, because I think policing is littered with, it would be a good idea to do this. And I use one at the moment that's very ripe for us, which is the management of sex offenders. More and more people are being convicted now of offences that cover the sex offenders registration, particularly about viewing abusive images online. It's an exponential growth. There's a model that means we go around and visit these people regularly. Well, because there's more and more of them, we can't get to. So it's an economy that grows more and more officers at a time we're reducing. But actually, you know, we need to do some evidence-based work now and say, how much of this going around actually works? Why do we do this? We're locked in a legislative framework that drives behaviour there's no evidence base for. So I think we can also save considerable amount of money and improve the effectiveness of policing through this work.
David, you've been very open in exploring a wide range of issues facing the police at large, in terms of its legacy, the contemporary challenges in terms of its organisation, we've moved to matrix organisation, the new types of recruitment and expectations of millennials, the changing nature of threats. And I'm sure that's been extremely interesting for a number of our listeners in terms of the parallels with their own organisations, as well as just learning about some of the very exciting things that are going on in the police force. So thank you very much indeed for your time. Much appreciated.
No, I've really enjoyed the conversation. Thank you.
The Middle was conceived and produced by Stephen Wilson. For notifications of future episodes, just click the follow button. Thank you for listening.